the town of Ellesmere versus DeFrancesco. Mr. McNally, how are you?
May it please the court, I'm Edward McNally from the Morris James firm for the town of Ellesmere. I think this case presents an important legal issue for Delaware's municipalities. It comes down to this, I think. Do they have the power to apply some general objective standards from their comprehensive plans to make land use decisions, or must they instead be limited to the application of mechanical engineering tests set out in their zoning code? I don't think this court has directly spoken on that issue, so this is a case in some respects of first impression. Start off with, I think, the statutory framework, then I'll talk about the opinion by the Superior Court, and then I will briefly touch on the reasonings of the Council of the Town of Ellesmere. With respect to the statutory framework, of course, we know that the Delaware General Assembly is mandated that all towns have comprehensive land use plans. Indeed, under Section 702 of Title 22, a comprehensive plan has, quote, the force of law, close quote. And, of course, the Ellesmere Zoning Code was adopted under Chapter 3 of Title 22, which gives the Council of the Town of Ellesmere very broad authority to review the subdivision plan for final determination.
In terms of the theory of how these are to interrelate, the comprehensive plan is supposed to drive the zoning ordinance. Is that right?
The comprehensive plan, I don't know exactly what you mean just to, when you talk about the driving it. Normally, a comprehensive plan sets out the exact zoning throughout the whole town, and the zoning code provides the technical requirements to meet the zoning in question. So they are certainly interrelated, and the comprehensive plan is supposed to, in one sense, yes, drive the zoning in the town.
Well, right. Can I put it a different way and perhaps clarify my own concerns here? Wouldn't a zoning ordinance, a zoning provision that is inconsistent with the comprehensive plan have to be nullified?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm sure you see where I'm going here, but if in this case the application complied with all the requirements of the zoning ordinances, but is arguably inconsistent with the comprehensive development plan, then doesn't that mean that the zoning code ordinance, the zoning regulations themselves are invalid?
I think that would only follow, Justice Berger, if you adopt the interpretation of the Superior Court, which is that the zoning code somehow sets out the standard that must be met. Our view is that the zoning code and the comprehensive plan are interrelated, but that there isn't any provision in the zoning code that directly speaks to the use of infill lots under the circumstances presented here. It just doesn't speak to infill lots. And so, therefore, there is no direct inconsistency.
Okay, well, then let me make sure I understand. If the zoning code specifically said you are authorized to have infill lots here, and it came up a second time, it's your position that that still could be rejected as being inconsistent with the comprehensive development plan, right?
I don't want to go that far, and I'll tell you why. I think if there's a clear inconsistency, then you're correct. If there's a way to make the two harmonize, then it seems to me they have to be harmonized. The situation.
Okay, so wait a sec. So if the zoning code specifically addressed this particular application and said it's permitted, and if nonetheless that were not consistent with the comprehensive development plan, then there'd be a problem with that zoning provision.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Okay. And it would have to give way to the comprehensive development plan, at least in terms of how the law is set up, right?
Correct.
Okay. But what we have here, if I understand you, is we have a comprehensive development plan and we have a zoning code, and the zoning code doesn't specifically address this particular application. but it doesn't specifically prohibit it either.
Correct.
And that being the case, on its face, it might appear to be allowed under the zoning code, but since it is not allowed under the comprehensive development plan, that takes precedence and therefore it gets denied.
I wish I could agree with everything you said,
but
I can't.
Okay.
My honesty requires me to say that the comprehensive plan, while it speaks negatively about infill, is not as explicit as perhaps it could be. And so an argument can be made that there is, that it's just not sufficiently, in all honesty, I have to say this, it's not sufficiently detailed so as to override the zoning code, or someone attempting to use the zoning code to get an infill lot. If the comprehensive plan said infill is prohibited, then I could agree with everything you said, Justice Berger. But I can't, because it doesn't say that, and I just can't honestly agree with that point.
So what you're saying is we've got two areas of vagueness, if you will. We've got the zoning code that doesn't expressly permit or prohibit the infill, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
the comprehensive development plan, which doesn't expressly prohibit or permit it, but indicates a general negative view of infill.
Correct.
Okay.
Now, that leads me to the point that I was just about to make, that if we had a zoning code that specifically said that, I'll just use the example from the Delta Aetna case, which said that fraternities are permitted. Well, you can't override that, it seems to me, by denying an application to have a fraternity house. That's what that case says. Now, the other cases that the court below relied on, such as the East Lake case, deal with situations where the reviewing body, either a planning commission or Newcastle County in the case of Cherno versus Folsom, were told by the ordinance, the only thing you can do is approve the plan or send it back. That's not what the statutory plan is in the town of Ellesmere, because the plan is clear that the town council can approve or reject, and that's what happened here. Now, the Superior Court put some limits on the council's authority to reject an application for subdivision. And the rationale is a rationale that I think we can all agree with, which is that there should be some limitation on a town's ability to reject a subdivision application to prevent arbitrary rulings not based on objective standards. Otherwise, you don't have the rule of law. You have people, it's a popularity contest, and that's really not what this court has sanctioned in the past when it's held that zoning decisions dealing with an individual parcel are in some respects, they're not legislative, they're sort of quasi-judicial. You have to be fair to the person with the application, and that goes, you know, way back. Now, so certainly Ellesmere agrees that there ought to be objective criteria. Now the question is, where do you get that criteria? The opposing side says all you do is look at the zoning code. If it fits the zoning code, that's it. We say, no, that you have to also look at the comprehensive plan, which since it has the force of law, and after all, the zoning code is an ordinance, and the comprehensive plan has the force of law, you can certainly look at the comprehensive plan.
I suppose there's nothing in the record that addresses custom usage and practice of buyers looking at zoning codes to deal with the prospective use and what they can do with the property, as opposed to looking at zoning codes and comprehensive plans.
There is nothing in the record in this case. That's correct. In this particular, there is a provision in the Ellesmere Zoning Code that permits an applicant for a certificate of occupancy to get a ruling from the town solicitor, of all people, about whether or not that particular use complies. But that's not really a direct answer to your question. The answer to your question is no. There's nothing in the record. And, indeed, there's no process.
Is that a ruling under the zoning code or a ruling under the comprehensive plan?
Under the zoning code. But the process, there is a process, of course. The process is you go to the Planning Commission, which, as we point out in our materials, has very broad authority to consider all this. You get the recommendation of the Planning Commission, which takes into account the comprehensive plan. And I think it's fair to say here, although the Planning Commissions in small towns perhaps do not articulate their reasoning with the greatest amount of clarity, But I think the record supports only the conclusion that they were concerned about this particular application as permitting infill. And infill, as the record does show, because there's specific testimony by Councilwoman Crisanti, which is cited in the record, we just don't have infill in Ellsbury except for two or three cases. And indeed, the appellee's counsel admitted that it's on the record, that it's just infill is an odd thing. So,
well, what is that process that you just described to us about getting an opinion from the town solicitor that it's okay to do something on a piece of land under the zoning code that doesn't refer to the comprehensive plan?
It refers to the zoning code. Excuse me, Justice, I apologize. I might cut you off there. I didn't mean to do that. It refers to the provisions in the zoning code that permit a use that is a grandfathered use. So that, to take an example that's actually occurred, if you buy a building that's a commercial building in a residential area of Ellesmere, you may continue the same use that that building has been devoted to prior to the time the zoning code was adopted. If there's a question about whether your use is the same use, if you're actually operating a drugstore or, in one case, making it into a dog grooming parlor, you can ask for a ruling as to whether your use is grandfathered. That's all I was talking about. And I'm sorry I brought it up because I think it's got me off the topic a little bit.
Are there different processes to adopt a comprehensive plan as opposed to a zoning code?
Yes.
It's easier to adopt a comprehensive plan?
Pardon?
Is it easier to do the comprehensive plan?
No, actually.
No, it's harder.
Because to do a comprehensive plan, you really have to have a full review of all land uses in the town. Indeed, there's a...
I'm talking about an approval process.
The approval process for the comprehensive plan is similar to the approval process for any ordinance, which is to say that you have a public hearing and you have public testimony on it and you vote on it as a council. But it's the same basic approval process. And the zoning code, of course, the same thing happens. You vote on the zoning code or you vote on amendments to the zoning code after public hearing. In the case of the zoning code, you have to go through the Planning Commission first to amend the zoning code. In the case of adopting the comprehensive plan, you don't have to go through the Planning Commission, but as a practical matter, that's what you do.
Well, a few moments ago, you were going to tell us about some objective criteria.
Yeah.
So what are they?
The comprehensive plan says that there are certain uses in the town of Ellesmere that are problems, one of which is what I just alluded to, which is grandfathered properties. Another is infill. As that was interpreted by Councilman Jaromchuk at the hearing, and this is all in the record on in A59, those are problem areas that the town wants to eliminate. And therefore, that's the only real reference to infill in the comprehensive plan. That's why in answering Justice Berger's question, I could not say to her that the comprehensive plan clearly says you can't have infill, because I think the comprehensive plan contemplates that there might be a circumstance where, I suppose, infill would be permitted. But not in this case, because the record shows that, as Councilwoman Prasanti said, this kind of infill is is just not in Ellesmere. It involves building a house in somebody's backyard. And it would be different if there were a whole boulevard between two rows of houses where you could build a lot of houses and infill with their own street and so forth. But that's not this case.
Well, is it still infill if it has its own street? It wouldn't be infill any longer, would it?
Yes, it would be. It depends. Here, of course, the access is provided by a driveway, which is not considered under the zoning code to be a public street. I suppose in the example I just gave, it could be considered not infill because it has its own street and therefore borders on a street. So maybe my example was a bad one, Justice Holland.
Well, I'm not sure I understand infill, so maybe you should start by telling me what you think infill is, because my impression was if you're on a public street, it's not infill.
In one sense, I think that's correct, because if there's a gap between two houses on a public street, house burns down, for example, and you rebuild another house, that's not infill. And my understanding is that infill is more or less exactly what's happened here, which is that you find a plot that is large enough, if it's subdivided, that you can squeeze in another house on it, and it's between two other houses. And in that respect, it doesn't have a public access. It doesn't have a street to it. And as I said, it takes up the space. It happens to be just large enough between two other houses, so it fills in that space.
Now, well, going to an objective criteria, you were seeming to distinguish between types of infill, which seemed to suggest that someone could come to the town council and they would say, your infill is okay, but this infill in the case we have before us is not. You've had a lot of time to think about this. Can you think of an example of where they would say infill is permitted, although this one is not?
Yeah, I think so. I think that a case where there was no public street, but the new lot that was going to be created by the subdivision did not was not surrounded by other houses. In those circumstances where you had a very large lot, say, for example, a very large lot backed up into a highway or a park where people didn't have access to the lot. In those circumstances, the effect of putting the house in there is less detrimental. And in those circumstances, I think the council could possibly say that they would accept that instance, depending on the circumstances, is okay. That's about the only circumstance that I can think of that would, it seems to me, not involve the issues that were involved here, which is in a crowded urban area, squeezing houses in wherever there's just enough room.
I know you're running out of time here, but couldn't this problem, if it is one, be resolved by amending the zoning code?
Yes.
And couldn't that still apply to this application, even though the application was in before the amendment?
That's a good question, because the law of when someone has a vested right under a zoning code is always very confusing. To take an example that's common is when people come in and apply for a building permit, and once they make that application, changing the building code has always been a problem. I haven't thought through the issue that you raised, Justice Berger. I will point out that the Superior Court opinion specifically says if they did that, that would raise, quote, other problems. And I'm sure we would be back here if we did. The final thing I want to point out, which is not disputed, is that there is an error in the Superior Court's opinion where it says that the particular lot in question prior to subdivision permitted two houses. I think we all understand that that is not correct. The very purpose of the subdivision was, of course, to make the one lot into two, and the zoning code is quite clear. It specifically says you can only have one house per lot.
And is it my understanding that the proposal is to create a lot that's about 10,000 feet and retain the existing lot with the existing house at about 6,000 feet? So the lot being created would be larger than the one being retained?
Justice Holland, that sounds right, but I don't remember the square footage as I sit here in front of you. There is a drawing right in the record that's, I think, A10 or something like that. I just don't remember the number, sir.
Right. Well, you're down to less than 2 minutes.
May I reserve, please?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, members of the court. May it please the court, Thomas C. Marconi, Esquire, for John D. Francisco. Members of the court, I agree with Mr. McNally that this case is really about the rule of law. We have a zoning code that was enacted. It was enacted pursuant to state law. State law requires that the municipalities enact these zoning codes and enforce them, and it even sets forth a requirement that they make a mechanism to amend and to vary these zoning codes. The town of Ellesmere did that. It did that pursuant to the comprehensive plan, and that zoning code says that if you meet certain dimensional requirements and certain use requirements in this zoning district, that you can have what the code calls a rear lot. Our application from December of 1985 requested a rear lot. We submitted it to the town and followed the procedures established by the town for approval.
Is a rear lot a synonym for infill lots?
Well, no, I think a rear lot is a subset of what one might call infill. There's probably more ways to establish infill than just through a rear lot. But I think I agree with Mr. McNally that, yes, the establishment of a rear lot is probably infill. I disagree, though, that is something that the comprehensive plan says is not a good thing. It's under the recommendation section for future use. It's something that's referred to as a modern practice. I don't think that the author of the comprehensive plan would refer to it that way or include it in that section of the plan.
Is it your position that this proposal is consistent with the comprehensive plan?
Yes.
And what supports that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
What supports that conclusion?
The provisions of the plan that refer to it as a modern practice. We've talked about it in our papers, but it's the section of the fact that the idea of infill is listed and identified as a contemporary practice, I think it says exactly. And also that it is under the heading, the section of the comprehensive plan that talks about recommendations for future land development or land uses. I don't remember exactly what it says, but the way I read that language, it's considered to be something to look forward to doing as opposed to avoiding, because it says there's not much room left in Ellesmere within the confines of the municipality to do very much development and to fix things up. So the only thing you can do, I think they recommend against annexing other land, so the only thing you can do is take what you have and try to build on that. And
well, I think as I understand your argument and to a certain extent the Superior Court's opinion, your position is that your client looked at the code and the code permits what your client wants to do, and your client came forward with a plan that had the permitted number of square feet, the required access, and in all ways conformed with what was condoned, and therefore the council should have looked at that, and once it confirmed that your client had complied with everything and didn't require any special accommodation in any way, it simply had to approve it.
I agree, subject to if there were any conditions that reasonable conditions that they thought would be of assistance, then yes, I agree with what you said.
Well,
and that's what the cases hold.
Okay, let me give you a slightly different hypothetical. Let's assume for the moment that your client's subdivision application was approved, and then a neighbor appealed that decision. And argued that the zoning code was inconsistent with the comprehensive development plan, and therefore any zoning provision that would allow this this type of subdivision would have to be struck down. Wouldn't that neighbor be entitled to make that argument, and wouldn't the court have to consider whether the comprehensive development plan, if you will, trumps the zoning provision?
I suppose it would, Your Honor, but I don't think that the solution to, in this instance, if it is inconsistent with the comprehensive plan, I don't think that the solution is to invalidate the zoning ordinance by the court. I think the zoning ordinance has to be enforced, and maybe the town should amend its zoning ordinance to be in compliance. But I think people have the right to rely on what's in the zoning ordinance when it comes to making use of their land.
Well, but the kind of cases I'm thinking about are cases where it was neighbors who were unhappy with the idea of some development going forward, and that they brought suit, and a frequent argument would be that this development was in violation or inconsistent with the comprehensive development plan. And the courts have made those determinations and applied them to the development that was at issue, not, you know, from this development gets to go forward, even though it's inconsistent with the comprehensive development plan, but the next one gets stopped. So couldn't that same process in a different way be applied here in terms of trying to determine whether your client's subdivision would or would not be inconsistent with the comprehensive development plan?
You know, I honestly don't think I understand your question. I'm sorry.
If I understand your argument, it is that you have permission, if you will, by virtue of the existing zoning code to do exactly what you've applied to do, right?
Yes.
And to the extent that there's some problem because this may or may not be inconsistent with what the comprehensive development plan had in mind in terms of infilling and so forth, then that's a problem that can be taken up and the zoning code can be amended and you know, it can be dealt with. But in the meantime, your client gets his subdivision. Isn't
correct.
That what you're saying?
Yes.
And all I'm asking is that, as I understand it, there have been cases where a proposed subdivision or development of some sort has been contested by neighbors who were opposed to it. And the question of whether that subdivision was inconsistent with the existing comprehensive development plan has been adjudicated. As to that one, not saying, well, yeah, that is inconsistent, but they already got their permission, so we'll only apply it to the next person.
You know, I'm not aware of cases where I haven't found any cases where, if I understand you correctly, where someone came in and said, the zoning code that was applied to the approval of this application is inconsistent with the comprehensive plan of this municipality, therefore it should be invalidated, and the court said, you're right, it should be invalidated, and it is invalidated. Going back to the, you know, applying it to this application, not just moving forward. I'm not aware of that, of a case where that happened, but I suppose we could have missed the case.
Well, I think it's in a slightly different context, but go ahead.
Thank you. The Delaware cases, Delta Ada, East Lake Partners, the Newark cases, the Hanloff case, they all are very clear, and I think Judge Herlihy applied them correctly. If you establish a zoning code and someone applies and the application and the proposal fits within the zoning code, I'm not saying you can't deny the application. I think the cases say that you can apply certain requirements that are reasonable. One of the requirements or an example of that was the second Delta Ada case where the town in Newark basically lost on the first go-around saying that, you know, they had to allow this development, this fraternity house, to come in. And so they tried to kind of do it another way by saying, well, you can't have anybody consuming alcohol on the premises. That is a condition that we're going to oppose. We have to approve your application, but we're going to impose this condition. And the court said that's not reasonable. So what the courts are saying is you know, if it meets the requirements, you can't just deny it on the basis of some general decision that it doesn't, you know, it's adverse to the health and safety of the and morals of the townspeople, because as we tried to argue in the papers and like we argued below, that's already been decided. If you enact a zoning code that says that a rear lot subdivision is acceptable in the town of Ellesmere in an R1 district as long as all the dimensional requirements are met, you've already made that decision that it's consistent with the health, safety, and morals. And you can't, on an individual application, hold otherwise, because getting back to the rule of law issue, what is to prevent me getting it and the next person not, with the exact same application, the exact same criteria, the exact same compliance? We can't have a rule of law if that's how we're going to do it.
Well, if the comprehensive plan had been very specific and expressly said no infilling of this kind, dotting all the I's, crossing all the T's, and this zoning ordinance conflicted, which one controls?
I can't cite you a case or a statute, but I think that equity, if nothing else, would require that the person who comes forward, buys their home or buys their property and submits it through the process and meets the requirements of the process. I think it's the municipality's obligation to make sure that its zoning code complies with its plan. I don't think you can thrust that liability onto, you know, poor John D. Francisco, who owns a little piece of ground in the town and who, you know, is just trying to subdivide it and make a couple dollars or whatever he's trying to do. I think it's incumbent on the town to cross the I's and or cross the T's and dot the I's in that situation. I don't think it invalidates it. I think it just shows that they're not being consistent.
So the zoning law controls?
I would say that, yes, I think the zoning law controls. The comprehensive plan under state law is supposed to be just that, a comprehensive plan. The details are left of the zoning code. And if you read that comprehensive plan, Ellesmere's comprehensive plan cover to cover, it's not very detailed at all. It just has all kinds of general suggestions and findings and it's really...
Do comprehensive plans sometimes envision a future that is actually inconsistent with the current zoning ordinances?
I'm sure they do. And this one, I don't know that you could say that Ellesmere's envisions something that's inconsistent. It certainly proposes changes, and it has an idea. One of the ideas that I just sort of jumped out at me consistently was they talked about that you should have some kind of a main street. A certain part of Kirkwood Highway in Ellesmere should be more pedestrian-friendly, have more shops, more retail sort of things, as I recall. But that's about as detailed as they get. This one really didn't get into a whole lot of issues concerning zoning. It just talks about the big picture. And it's very hard, in my view, to go through that thing and say, oh, this means that they don't want infill, or they don't want non-conforming uses, or they don't want this, or they don't want that. I don't think that's what it's supposed to do anyway. And if it is, it doesn't work. That's why they have to use that as the framework for the zoning code. And that's what people should have to go to, and that's what they should be allowed to rely on. But, Your Honor, I'd like to, if there's no other questions, I'll reserve.
You're not going to get the reply again. You can conclude if you want.
I'll conclude. I'm sorry. I'll conclude. I don't want to be a broken record, but all of the cases that we cited, Missouri Appeals Court, the 11th Circuit, the Delaware cases that we cited, they all say that you cannot just on the general basis of, well, it's not good for the health, morals, and safety of the town to allow somebody to do what the zoning code says. That's not permissible. And then the argument that has been made here some and certainly in other places that, well, we're not just a rubber stamp. If we were a rubber stamp, then why do you even, in fact, the town council said this at the hearing. If all you needed to do was show technical compliance, then why are you here? Well, the court says, that's not a basis for finding that if you comply with the technical requirements, then you should be allowed to get your application approved. It's not a rubber stamp. The Ellesmere Code says they are the people, the council are the people that go through it. Now, they rely on the Planning Commission. They rely on the town engineer. But they go through the application, or they're supposed to, and they confirm, yes, they satisfy these requirements. Yes, they satisfy those requirements. And then they're free to impose reasonable restrictions if they want. But they can't say no. They can't say, well, we don't think that that's a good idea anymore, even though we put it in our zoning code. It's just not, to get back to the idea of the rule of law, that's not how you function under the rule of law. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to make three quick points. The first is that the Walmart cases, which are cited on page 5 of our brief, opening brief, deal exactly with the situation of the comprehensive plan overruling a zoning decision. So I recognize they're not Supreme Court cases, but that's all the change of courts already dealt with that issue. It quoted the statute and goes through the reasons why. Second point, my friend says that all the cases say that if you follow the zoning code, you are automatically subject to approval. There's not a single case that they can cite that the governing statutory authority for the reviewing body has the is as broad as the discretion given to the town of Ellesmere in this case. We go all the way back to Acherno versus Folsom, where this court squarely held that because the statute required a plan be approved if it met the zoning code, county council must approve. That's not this case. And the very case that they rely on to prove that point, the Eastlake case, squarely says that it turns on the language of the statute that governed the discretion of the reviewing body, and that that reviewing body, in that case, did not have discretion to deny a zoning application. So there are the cases just don't say what they say they are. And finally, the last point is, my friend argues about his interpretation of the comprehensive plan. This is a repeal from a grant of a writ of certiorari. The town council interpreted the comprehensive plan, said so on the record, and issued this decision. And I don't think that can be reversed because it's logical on a writ of certiorari. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement, and we will adjourn.